Ni hao. Hey. My name is Bowden Kelly. I'm a program manager at Microsoft working on the TypeScript team. I'm really honored to be here today at Microsoft Ignite China to talk to you about TypeScript and Visual Studio Code. And I want you to think about a couple of things over the next 45 minutes. First and foremost, if you take nothing else away from this session, I want you to understand why TypeScript. There's a lot of things in the JavaScript world today. There's a lot of new libraries. There's a lot of new tools. And all of them are trying to get your attention. All of them take effort to assess and to understand and to know whether you should try it or not. And if you learn nothing else, I want you to learn why TypeScript is worth your time, why it's worth it to learn TypeScript. We're then going to look at TypeScript in action, primarily in VS Code. I'm going to show you how easy it is to get started with TypeScript in VS Code. And finally, we'll take a look at some of the new things that have just recently come out in TypeScript 2.0. So, why TypeScript? To me, it's very simple. We believe that developers should be able to focus on creating amazing things. It's the creation of programming that brings us all here. It's creating new experiences, it's creating new products, it's delighting our customers. That's why we do what we do. But unfortunately, that's not really how we spend most of our time. If you think about it, you spend a vast majority of your time understanding. Understanding the language, understanding the libraries you're using, understanding your editor, understanding the existing code you're working with, reading documentation. You spend a vast majority of your time understanding. Once you know what you're working with, you spend time maintaining what's already there. Building on top of what has come before you means you have to take the overhead of maintenance. That means fixing bugs, that means filing issues, that means doing customer support. And finally, once you've done all of those things, then and only then can you actually create that new experience, deliver the software your customers want. And we experienced this firsthand with JavaScript, with a project called Monaco. Has anyone heard about Project Monaco? Has anyone heard of VS Code? So VS Code came from Project Monaco. Monaco started as a pretty bold idea. We wanted to take an entire editing experience and place it in the browser. And to do this, of course, we had to do all of our logic in JavaScript. And as Monaco grew, you know, it hit 200, 300,000 lines of code, it started to get difficult. And when we hit 600, 700, 800,000 lines of code, it became almost impossible. We started feeling the pain of JavaScript. Being a dynamic language meant that refactoring was incredibly difficult. Anytime we wanted to add a new feature, it was so risky that we were introducing new bugs that the code base was almost read-only. And we actually measured this breakdown with Monaco. We looked at it and we said, where are we spending our time? And it turned out that 70% of our time was spent just trying to understand what our existing JavaScript was even doing. From there, we spent 25% of our time maintaining it, mostly fixing bugs that we introduced. And then only 5%, that's 2 hours in a 40-hour work week, we spent actually trying to build an editor in the browser. So this wasn't sustainable. And so we said, what if? You know, what if we could take this 70-25, and what if we could build tools that helped us understand, that helped us maintain? And what if those savings could go directly back into our creation time? What would that look like? And it turns out even just minor savings in understanding, in code navigation, in tools that help you understand method signatures, minor savings go directly into fueling your creation time. And that's why we created TypeScript. Now, TypeScript is, by definition, an optionally typed superset of JavaScript that compiles back to JavaScript. But quite frankly, I don't even really know what that means, so let's just dive into some code and I'll show you what it means. So I'm going to launch VS Code. And again, you can use TypeScript in any editor. I'm going to use VS Code because it's fast, it's lightweight, it's fantastic for demos. And quite frankly, there's a lot of new features that I like showing people. And so here we have a plain JavaScript file. We have some functions, we have some variables, we have some if-else blocks, very, very normal looking JavaScript. And to get started with TypeScript, I'm just going to take this file and I'm going to rename it from JS to TS. And right away, you can see we now have some squiggles. And so what's happening is TypeScript is looking at all of the types that already exist in JavaScript. You know, in JavaScript, you have numbers and strings and objects. So TypeScript's looking at what those are behind the scenes, and it's starting to infer. It's starting to analyze them and try to understand, you know, what's going on. Are you really doing what you expect to be doing? And we have squiggles where TypeScript thinks we're a little off. So here we see we have argument of type, this object literal, is not assignable to parameter of type property descriptor. Well, if you're used to JavaScript, you're probably not used to seeing types, but they exist. They're there behind the scenes. You know, this function expects you to pass in a certain kind of config object. And if you don't, it's going to misbehave. So now that we're using TypeScript, we can do code navigation, such as goToDefinition on this, and we can see exactly what this function's expecting. And sure enough, we have this property descriptor. And if we peek definition on that, we can see exactly the properties that are being expected by this object. And so here we have configurable, enumerable, value, writable, and get and set. And if we go back to our code, we have read-only. Read-only was not in that list. Probably what we intended to do was do writable false. And we can actually also get code completion here to see what properties are valid. And sure enough, we can select writable false, and our error is resolved. Let's go look at the second example. Here we have operator greater than cannot be applied to types some function that returns a number and number. If we go to definition on ship weight, we see that, in fact, this takes some text from the page, it parses it into an int, and it returns it. So probably what we intended to do was compare the result of ship weight with 100 to see if the package is oversized. But what happens in JavaScript if you compare a function and a number? Does anyone know? It's false every single time. Why is it false? Why is it not true? I don't know. I can't tell you. But TypeScript can tell you that this is off. And it looks at this and it says, you know, probably what you intended to do was compare numbers and numbers, because otherwise in JavaScript, this code is never going to run. And you're never going to get an error on it either. And so at runtime, it's just going to misbehave. And you're not going to know that it's a simple missing parentheses that is making your code misbehave. And this is going to take hours. I'm sure I've done this many, many times. And I'm sure most of you have too. And finding a bug like this takes a massive amount of time. And again, we haven't done anything yet. This is all just pure JavaScript. But TypeScript is inferring types behind the scenes and helping us catch errors before this code makes it into production. But there's some things that TypeScript cannot infer types on. For example, this email address parameter. In JavaScript, you can pass in as many parameters as you want. You can pass in one parameter, you can pass in 10 parameters. Regardless of what you ask for, you have no guarantee that the caller is going to match this contract. And so TypeScript knows this, and so it's saying email address can be anything. But what we can do is, in this case, we expect either a string or a string array. And so we can tell TypeScript with a type annotation that, hey, I want this to be a string or a string array, and I want you to enforce that type. And so now if we hover over email address, we see that TypeScript knows that this is a string or a string array. And in fact, these types flow throughout the rest of the function body. And this is really cool, because now you can see that down here we have a type guard, which is checking to make sure that this if block is only running on arrays. And if we look at email address inside this type guard, we can see that it is only a string array, and TypeScript knows that. And so this is pretty cool. So let's say if we made a mistake like reversing these parameter values. Well, then TypeScript's going to look at this and it's going to say, okay, well, you know, trim does not belong on a number. Value is a number. Index is a string. And if we look at for each, we can see from the method signature that, in fact, value becomes from before index in the call. And so because we've only added a single type to this function, we now get the benefits of type checking throughout the whole thing. But again, this is strictly optional. Notice we have another parameter here that we did not add a type annotation to. We could if we want to, but it's not required. It's strictly opt-in. TypeScript will do its best with the types you have to give you good type checking. And then as you want to, as you opt in, you can add stronger types to get even better type checking. So all of this now, we're looking at a TypeScript file. We have annotations that are not going to run in JavaScript. So we have to do something to get back to JavaScript. And so that's where the TypeScript compiler comes in. If we run the TypeScript compiler on this demo TS file, we will get out a JavaScript file. I'm going to hit Control Enter in VS Code to open these up side by side. And here you can see these look almost identical. Everything is the same except for the type information, which, oh, I have both JavaScript files open. Except for the type information. Here you see we have the annotation, and now you see it has been removed. And so at compile time, while you're editing, you get the benefit of strong types. If you add them, you can get the extra tooling that comes with it. But at runtime, you get the value of JavaScript, which is its ability to run everywhere on every platform, on any operating system, and any host. And that's pretty awesome. So what you just saw is that you can benefit from TypeScript today. You don't need to know anything special. All you need is JavaScript to get started. If you take any JS file in VS Code and you convert it to TS, you'll start getting type checking right away. You can catch bugs in real time. This saves you hours, potentially days of debugging and finding those pesky bugs that don't generate errors at runtime in JavaScript. And you can add, you can gradually add in types to slowly get safer editing environments as you go. And finally, you saw this in VS Code. VS Code makes this incredibly easy. TypeScript works out of the box. You don't even need a plugin to make it work. All you need is a TS extension. And all of this comes together to let you spend more time writing code and less time maintaining it. And so what you saw is we took the JavaScript language, we started out with plain JavaScript, and we added types on top. TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. And so by adding types on top, we can then run it through the compiler and get plain JavaScript back. And this is pretty important because it means that JavaScript is TypeScript. To write TypeScript, all you need to know is JavaScript. But at the same time, we also have people who come from C# or Java or other strongly typed languages who think that they can pick up TypeScript instead of learning JavaScript. And that's not true. You need to understand the basics of JavaScript in order to write TypeScript because it is a superset. But at the same time, you only need to understand JavaScript to start writing TypeScript. And so to truly understand TypeScript, you need to understand JavaScript. Because it, after all, it is just types laid on top of JavaScript. And so when we talk about JavaScript these days, it's really not as simple as it used to be. Previously, you could talk about JavaScript and everyone knew what you were talking about. These days, we have ES5 and ES3, and we also have ES6. And now we even have ES7. And this is because the TC39 committee, the standards body, which works on the JavaScript language, is introducing new updates. And this is actually a really good thing. JavaScript is the most popular language in the world. And by adding new features to JavaScript, it means that as JavaScript developers, we get the latest and greatest language features. But it comes at a cost. If you remember back in the IE6 days, when you could write JavaScript and it might not necessarily run the same in every browser, we're now back in kind of the same situation. Because we're adding all of these new features to the spec of JavaScript, that doesn't mean that it will run in every host. And so Edge has its own JavaScript engine, Chrome and Firefox have their own JavaScript engines. And if we look at their support for these new features, this is the KangX compatibility table of every single feature in ES6. And as you can see, it's mostly green, and that's a good thing. If you're using Edge, Firefox, Chrome, or Safari, you can use ES6 today, and the features you use will run as expected. However, if you're targeting an older version of Node, say Node 4 or maybe Node 12, your features might not work. You might write a class, and it might error at runtime. If you're targeting mobile devices, if you're targeting Android, your code might not work. And this is only ES6. ES7 recently came out, and the situation is a little more bleak. Right? Firefox supports roughly half the features. Chrome is 80%. Node has almost no coverage of ES7. And so it's up to you as the developer to understand, okay, if I want to use these new JavaScript features that make me the most productive, I need to understand exactly all the environments I'm targeting and which features they support. Let's talk about ES8. That's the one that's up and coming in the future. That is a lot of red, which means you can't even use these features even if you want to. And we thought this was problematic because, again, we want developers to be the most productive they can be at coding time. And so what TypeScript does is it takes all of this ES5, ES6, ES7, all of it, and it wraps it all up. And so it will understand anything you feed it to the compiler. And so whether you use ES5 or ES6 or ES7 features, all of those will go into the compiler and come out as ES5. TypeScript will rewrite the code you've written in functionally equivalent JavaScript so that you can get the benefits of using these latest features while you're writing code. But at runtime, you have the safety of knowing that all of your features will work in every single browser on every single platform. And so again, I always believe that code speaks louder than words, so let's look at that in action. So one of the new ES6 features is let and const. And so I can say let age equals 25, const name equals Bowden. I've already used that. And you will see when I compile this, I will get back vars. That's because vars are ES5 compliant. Var will work in every single browser. Let and const, as you saw by those giant graphs, may or may not work. And so I can still use these features while I'm coding. And at runtime, this is what's going through my browser. And it is functionally equivalent. And so before I show you a couple more things, let me show you how easy it is to set up VS Code for TypeScript editing. It's kind of a pain to go back and forth between your terminal and run the compiler yourself. So VS Code has integrated task runners. And so what I'm going to do real quick is I'm going to create a tsconfig file by saying tsc --init. And what this is going to do is it's going to create a default tsconfig file in the wrong folder because I messed up. This is going to create a default tsconfig file that just has some basic compiler options. And now what I can do is I can have VS Code reference this, and I can say Control-Shift-B, and they'll say you don't have a task runner. And if any time you don't know a shortcut in VS Code, you can always use the command palette and say build, run build task, and the same thing will happen. And I find this is a very helpful way of learning the hotkeys because, of course, it'll show you the hotkey in line. And so now it says, okay, you need to configure a task runner. And they have a handful of base templates. And here you see a tsconfig and a watch mode. Watch mode basically takes your tsconfig file and it constantly watches your file. And every time you make a change, it will recompile. So you don't have to worry about constantly flipping back and forth between your terminal to keep compiling or even compiling from your editor. And so we're going to go ahead and do that. So when I click this, it's going to create a task runner template for me. There's a bunch of options I could add here if I wanted to. But out of the box, this will work. And now I'm going to hit Control-Shift-B again. And now you can see in the bottom left, it is running. And I have a billion errors. Oh, no. One second. All right. So again, now that I'm in watch mode, as I make changes, they will reflect in my JavaScript file. And so let's say I want to use another ES6 feature like a class. I can say class customer, but I'm writing in JavaScript, excuse me. All right, one more time. Here we go. I say class customer, And I can say it's going to have an age. It's going to have a name. And this is an ES6 class. This is a class like you'd expect to see in Java or C Sharp. But this doesn't exist in ES5 JavaScript, right? In JavaScript, you have these function-based classes. And so you can see in the background, my file watcher saw that I made a change, recompiled it, and down-level emitted it to ES5. And so while I can use this class, which for me I think is more useful, I can use this class and know that it's going to work at runtime because the functionally equivalent ES5 version is actually running. And so, of course, I can continue doing things like you might expect, like a constructor, and then I can do assignment. Fix that. And again, as I go, the file watcher is continuously running in the background and recompiling on the fly. And that's really nice. But again, you don't have to use ES6 features. If you want to write just a basic ES5 class because that's what you're used to, you can do that. And it will compile it just the same, and it will output it just the same. And so again, the TypeScript compiler is what does all the work here. It takes in the ES6 feature, it takes in the TypeScript type annotation, it takes in the ES5 plain JavaScript, it takes it all, and it compiles it into something that's always going to work. And so when we look back at this definition of TypeScript, hopefully you now understand the optionally typed superset. As we saw in the first part of the demo, you don't have to put types in. You only have to do it if you want to. And it's a type superset. We started with JavaScript and we added on top of it. All JavaScript is valid TypeScript. And it compiles back to plain JavaScript. And I mean plain JavaScript, ES5 JavaScript, the same JavaScript that runs in every browser, on every platform, on every device. And that's super, super valuable. It means that you get to be as productive as you can. You can use all of the newest language features. You can get all of the benefits of tooling from strong types at edit time. But at runtime, all of that fades away. So now hopefully you understand a little bit more what TypeScript is, how it works, and why it helps you spend more time editing code and less time maintaining it. Now I want to talk a little bit more about TypeScript 2.0. TypeScript 2.0 was our biggest release yet. It was a couple months ago, and we spent probably 6 or 7 months working on it, and it really shows. We have tons and tons and tons of new features in TypeScript 2.0. Non-nullable types, never types, read-only properties, at types, UMD module definitions. The list goes on and on and on. And if you're currently using TypeScript and you haven't tried out TypeScript 2.0 yet, I strongly encourage you to at least download it, give it a spin, and let us know what you think. But I really wanted to highlight three of what I think are the coolest features of TypeScript 2.0. The features that will make you most productive going forward. And that's non-nullable types, control flow analysis, and the at types DTS acquisition. Non-nullable types and control flow analysis kind of go together, so we're going to talk about them in a pair. Historically, in TypeScript, we've had nullable types. And what that means is for anything, whether it's a number or a Boolean or a normal object, it can also contain the value null or undefined. And if you've heard about, you know, the billion-dollar mistake of the null value, with JavaScript, it's even worse because we have null and undefined. And so developers are constantly trying to check for these values and make sure they're not appearing in their logic. And we have these things in TypeScript now called union types. And you saw it earlier. We said a string or a string array. And it allows us to say that something can be either or, you know, two of these types. And so using these union types, we can now pull out the undefined and null values and make them their own types. So that types are now non-nullable, which effectively means if you want a number to now be a null value as well, you have to use a union type to express it. Luckily, this is mostly done in the compiler. You don't really have to worry about doing this for the most part. And if you want to add undefined, you can union all three together. But this is extremely powerful because it now allows the compiler to analyze your code and think differently about null and undefined values. Previously, anything could hold a null and an undefined value, and so the compiler could not tell when something was allowed to be null and when it wasn't. That check fell on you and you alone. But I want to show you how this is valuable for developers. So here we have a TypeScript file. We have types, you can see. We have optional parameters, normal TypeScript stuff. You would think that, okay, we have no errors, so this must be pretty good. There must be no errors in this file. Well, that's not necessarily the case. And if we go to our tsconfig, there's now an option called strict null checks. And by flipping this to true, we can now tell the compiler that we want to use non-nullable types. And if we go back to our file here, I'm going to go ahead and reload it just to speed it up. Oh, man. One second. Wrong file. All right, so we're going to set this strict null checks to true. And you'll see that we now have a bunch of errors. And so if we go ahead and look at these, we can see that TypeScript is telling us that this object text is possibly undefined. And why is that? Well, if we look at text, we can see that it's an optional parameter, which means we may pass it in, we may not. And so at runtime, this could technically be undefined. Previously, anything could always be undefined. And so TypeScript couldn't tell us if this was out of the ordinary or not. Now that we know that this is an area in which text is usually not undefined, but it is now, it can tell us. And so we can protect against that. So if we just do a truthy check, and I can use VS Code to auto-format for me, you can see that the error is resolved. And now if we look at count, we can see count is used before being assigned. OK, well, if we look at this, we can see that, sure enough, we have let count equal number, but we never assign it. And so we get here, and count has not been initialized. Ooh, apologies. And so we can go ahead and set this to 0. And that what's happening now is this is the control flow analysis. This is TypeScript looking at this variable count and tracing all of its possible states as it goes through this entire scope. And then so basically, it's trying to see that at any given point, is this assigned? And now that we have assigned it, this is called definite assignment analysis, we know that for the rest of the function block, that this value is not undefined. It always will have a value. And so that resolves that error. And here we can see argument of type string or null is not assignable to parameter of type string or undefined. And again, so we know this is either a string or an undefined, but here we're passing in a null. And so again, not all values can take a null unless we explicitly tell it. And so we'll go ahead and do that. And so now we're saying that, hey, this text can be either a string or a null array, that these values can be null, but we have another error. Now we see that object is possibly null. Now that we've said that, hey, we're allowed to have null values in here, TypeScript is saying that length will not exist on a null value. And so you need to make sure that this can't be a null value. And so we can go ahead and add another check in line there. And now all of our errors resolved, and we know that this code has no bugs. And that's the power of non-nullable types and control flow analysis, which is pretty cool. So some other places where non-nullable types are extremely helpful is looking at the quirks of JavaScript. If most people who've been doing JavaScript for a while have learned all the quirks, you know, double equals versus triple equals, how to tell if something's null or undefined and what the difference is. But these are things that are really good for teaching a compiler. And when you teach a compiler like we have with non-nullable types, they can help you a lot. And so now we have quiz time. If S can be a string array, a null, or undefined, if we say if S, a truthy check, what are S's possible values at this point? String or a string array? Makes sense. What are they in the else block? You would expect null or undefined, but you would be wrong. It can also be a string. Why is that? Because JavaScript is terrible, and this is true. And so while you look at this code and you'd expect to see, okay, I'm in an else block, it must only be null or undefined. It can also be a string. And this is a common gotcha in JavaScript. And most people struggle through many bugs before they learn this the hard way. But TypeScript is extremely good at telling you what a type can possibly be at any point. Again, type of S equals 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 object. Again, another common check. We expect to see a string array or null. Well, why is that? Well, string, it's a primitive type. String array, arrays are objects. Null is an object. Undefined is a primitive. Why are null and undefined different? I couldn't possibly tell you. We'll have to save that one for Brendan Eich. But it's a common gotcha in JavaScript. And many developers have spent hours. If you go look on Stack Overflow, this question alone, why is null an object, has over 800,000 views. And that just shows you how many people constantly run into this on a day-to-day basis. TypeScript's incredibly good at this kind of mistake. The old double equals, S equals equals undefined. What do you expect to see here? Null or undefined? Why? That doesn't make any sense in the world. Why would you have equals equals undefined mean two different things? I have no idea. But JavaScript lets you do these things. JavaScript is weird. JavaScript is quirky. And because of that, we suffer as developers. But TypeScript can help you catch these kind of errors. On the fly, TypeScript knows. You know, type of S triple equals undefined. TypeScript knows that this is only undefined. And when you use TypeScript and you have non-nullable types, you can write your code as you expect it to work, and it will catch you. It will be those training wheels for if you're falling off the bike. And that's incredibly valuable. One more thing that non-nullable types and control flow analysis helps in. How many of you have ever been in a JavaScript code base that's not your own, and you come across a block of if and else statements or some kind of complex logic that's 30 or 40 lines long and has all sorts of type guards in it? This is when TypeScript can help you the most. If you get some kind of weird code where you have some mysterious function that returns like 18 different types, A, B, C, D, or E, and you have all sorts of complex logic, if X is instance of A, well, of course, you know, it's an A. If we reassign it to B, what is it? It's a B. But then if we say it's not B or C, well, what is it then? Well, I think it's a B or C. Okay, what if it's not a D? Well, in that case, it must be an E, right? So what do you have left after all that? Does anyone know what X is down here? Of course, you could go trace it out on a whiteboard. You could spend 15 minutes going through all the cases and making sure you're correct. But TypeScript will just tell you. It's a B, a C, or an E. And it's that simple. You can take the most complex logic that someone else has written before you, and instead of spending time trying to understand what your values can possibly be, TypeScript does the control flow analysis to tell you what possible types could exist at any given point. And so you can go anywhere in the code, and you can type, you know, X, the value you're looking at, and TypeScript will tell you, this can only be a B, a C, or an E. And this is anywhere. This is in complex logic. This is in basic logic. This is wherever you're currently writing your code. TypeScript helps you save time by not having to spend so much time understanding what's already there. So what did you see? Hopefully you've experienced it. Hopefully you know that in JavaScript, managing nullability is a pain. Undefined and null ruins everyone's life. Non-nullable types will help you manage that. Non-nullable types helps TypeScript reason about that so you don't have to. And when you combine that with control flow analysis, You have a truly full understanding of your existing code at any place in its execution, and that's extremely valuable. Let's talk about DTS files. Who here knows what DTS files or TypeScript declaration files are? A handful? Okay, well, in TypeScript, we have these TypeScript declaration files, which basically let you use a JavaScript library with TypeScript, something that has absolutely no types. You can use in TypeScript, and TypeScript will fully understand it. How it works is a DTS file is basically all of the types taken out of a JavaScript file and defined elsewhere as interfaces and the like. And basically, it sets the contract for an entire library. And when put together, a DTS file and a JavaScript file effectively make a TypeScript file. And the coolest part about TypeScript definition files is it's been a completely community-run effort. 3 or 4 years ago, the community started a GitHub repository called Definitely Typed. And basically, this is a repository for individuals to contribute their existing DTS files so that other people can use them. And over time, it grew and it grew. And there's now over 2,200 DTS files. And so people decided they needed a better way to get these things. Instead of going to GitHub and cloning the entire repo and then copying over the files you want, the community created tools like TSD and Typings. These tools helped you more easily download these DTS files, such that if you had jQuery, for example, you could just install the DTS file for jQuery instead of cloning the entire Definitely Typed repository. But it was still confusing. It was still hard. And so in TypeScript 2.0, we've introduced the at types scope. And basically what this is a private scope on NPM where all of Definitely Typed is published anytime there's an update. And so whenever there's a new DTS file introduced to Definitely Typed, we have a Git hook in place that takes it and publishes a new package to at types. And what this does is allows you to get all of these type definition files by only using NPM. And that makes this way easier. And so let me show you how that works. So here we have a very, very simple project. It's a single index HTML that references jQuery. And then we have a separate file that checks if jQuery exists. And if it does, it will tell us that jQuery is present. One second. All right, and so to show you that it exists at runtime, we'll just fire this up real quick. And of course, you see that, of course, it doesn't work. What is going on? All right, let's try this from scratch. All right, so we're going to add an index.html. It's going to be very simple. Again, we're only going to reference two files. We'll have jQuery 3.1.1.min.js. And we will copy that over. And then we will have file.js, which simply, needs to be TS, which simply looks for jQuery and alerts us. alerts us if it's there. All right. Anyway, what would have happened if I didn't destroy this demo was this would be undefined and TypeScript would be telling you that jQuery doesn't exist. And then what you can do is initialize npm, so it'll give you a package.json, which will be empty. And then back here in our terminal, we can say npm install --shave at types jQuery. And what this will do is it will go pull down the jQuery.dts from at TypeScope, which will mirror identically the file that's undefinitely typed. And so if we look at the node modules, we can see, sure enough, we have at types, jQuery, index.dts. And here you can see the power of the TypeScript community at work. We have thousands of lines of code that have all been contributed by the community to define the entire jQuery library in TypeScript. And what this allows us to do is now when we try to use jQuery, we have full IntelliSense. And TypeScript knows exactly what this is. And so, you know, if we now go to definition on AJAX, it will pull us to the index.dts file, which is the jQuery DTS file. And this is actually super powerful, not just TypeScript, but also JavaScript. For anyone who uses VS Code, in the latest version of VS Code, they released a feature called ATA, or Automatic Type Acquisition. And what this does is when you're writing JavaScript, we will detect that you have libraries present like jQuery or Lodash and go fetch the DTS file for those libraries in the background. So that when even you're in JavaScript, you get the same IntelliSense as you would if you were in TypeScript. And this is all because of the TypeScript community. Working extremely hard to define the types for every single JavaScript library out there. And it's pretty incredible. So again, all you need to get DTS files is npm. For whatever library you're using, be it jQuery, Lodash, Commander, Grunt, Gulp, whatever it is, all you have to do is npm install at types the library, and you'll get the DTS file. Definitely typed is the place that powers all this. It's still a very much a community-driven focus. And if you have a library that does not have a DTS file yet, you can always contribute it to Definitely Typed or request that someone help you write the typings for it on Definitely Typed. It's a very active community, and I strongly suggest you check it out. And finally, the DTS files not only help JavaScript or TypeScript developers, but it helps the millions of JavaScript developers who haven't started using TypeScript yet. It helps them get better IntelliSense. It helps them get better method signatures. And all of this makes it that much easier for developers to switch to TypeScript in the future and to contribute even better DTS files going forward. And I showed all of this in VS Code, but it's not just a VS Code thing. TypeScript has plugins for Sublime Text, Eclipse, Atom, Emacs, WebStorm, you name it. We built the language service in a very modular format so that any editor can easily plug into it and get the full access to all the features, just like VS and VS Code. However, in Visual Studio and in VS Code, it will always work out of the box, where that may not be the case for other editors. So in review, what did we see in this session? First of all, it is incredibly easy to get started with TypeScript. All you have to do is switch your JavaScript files to TS files, and VS Code will get you going fast. TypeScript 2.0 is huge. There is tons of stuff. I highlighted non-nullable types, control flow analysis, and the new at types acquisition. But I strongly encourage you to either look at typescriptlang.org, which is our website, or to jump on GitHub to learn more. Finally, we looked at VS Code in a lot of different cases. We saw how there's integrated terminals. We saw how there's task runners. We saw how any task that you want to do in TypeScript, whether it's formatting code, whether it's go-to definition or peak definition, it's all made extremely easy with VS Code. And if you haven't tried TypeScript and you want to, I strongly encourage you try it with VS Code. And finally, again, if you learned nothing else today, it's that TypeScript has one goal and one goal only, and that is to help you focus on writing code, on creation. No one wants to spend time fixing bugs. No one wants to spend time learning about the quirks of JavaScript. And every release of TypeScript adds more and more features that can help you do just that, write more code. I encourage you to join the community. We're fully open source. You can find us on GitHub. Our website is typescriptlang.org. Gitter is basically an online chat room full of community members from all over the world. You can talk to the team there, and you can also talk to other TypeScript enthusiasts. And of course, we're on Stack Overflow. We browse it almost every day to help people resolve issues getting started. I strongly encourage you to take your questions to the community. The TypeScript community is one of the most active communities in the JavaScript landscape. And again, thank you so much for coming to this session. I hope you learned some about TypeScript, but more importantly, I hope you understand why TypeScript is worth looking into so that you can go look into it more on your own. 谢谢.